Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm your host, once again, Juanita Watson, and joining me on the program is author Chris DeBrie. Chris has just published his new book, Shakespeare Ashes. Chris DeBrie is actually the author of three novels. His first, As Is, dealt with the difficulty of millennial life in humorous ways. His second, Selective Focus, was what he called a comic book in novel form. And his new book, his third, Shakespeare Ashes, takes the reader into the unfiltered thoughts of four very different characters. Chris was raised in North Carolina, becoming an Eagle Scout and a solid third baseman. He earned a bachelor's in communications from Appalachian State University and then moved to Roanoke, Virginia, where he now resides. Chris is a jack of all trades, and he feels his varied interests have helped him in his writing. He approaches his craft like a hybrid between a coroner and an anthropologist, thoroughly unflinching and with empathy. And Chris's website, thesnappynappy.com, is full of information. You can purchase his book there. We really encourage you to check it out. So that said, Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Juanita.
So I understand that friends and family and peers call you D.
Yes, that's right.
So is that okay if I call you D today?
Sure.
Okay. Great. Okay, so I mentioned that Shakespeare Ashes is your third novel, so I'd really like to get a little bit more backstory of your writing history. Take us back to when you first began writing and how the whole novel has become your preferred genre.
Well, I guess it started with my mother as a child, and that was one of her favorite things to entertain me and my older brother was to take us to the library. It was an inexpensive way to get some entertainment, and I spent a lot of time there, so pretty much from the beginning, I was really into the world of books, and I knew pretty early on that that's what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I was ever going to make a living at it, but I knew that's where I was going.
Mm-hmm. So how did you actually, in your adult life, get into writing novels?
It just never stopped. Ever since I was spending those days in the library, I was making up my own stories, and as for class projects in school, I pretty much always did something that involved creating a book or a homemade story somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got older, it just kept going. I looked in one of my file cabinets as a college student and saw that I had a lot of stories that I could work on.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a pretty big leap from just writing stories to actually putting a book and publishing a book and getting it out there. So what was it that basically pushed you to really getting serious and publishing, getting a hard copy of your book on the shelves?
At first, it just started because the whole idea of POD or print on demand publishing happened about 10 years ago, I guess it was,
mm-hmm.
and it made it affordable for one person to pretty much put together a project if they wanted to. And I just wanted to see my name. I wanted my name in print and hold my own book in my hand. That's really how it started. And I was probably 99, I guess, when As Is came out for the first time. And I was just happy to hold it in my hand, as I said. But then a few weeks later, I started getting emails from random people who saw the book, in Seattle and Florida and this kind of thing. And I was like, I didn't expect anybody to actually read this book.
Mm-hmm.
I just did it for myself, and I just thought to myself, maybe I can take this a little further than I thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, how exciting to get that first book in your hand is always just, it's such an accomplishment. Well, at this point, you've been writing for, basically your whole life and as a career and getting books out there for about 10 years now. So would you have a set way of describing yourself as a writer and your particular writing style?
I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can put it into a few words. Or number one, I never thought about it. And secondly, I just have too many interests. I go in too many directions with writing and with everything, I guess. And I mean, I can write a mystery or horror story or just a coming-of-age story, or the focus is, as I said, kind of a superhero story. I just go in so many directions. I don't have one style or one thing I can point to and say, well, this is me. I guess maybe I'm still finding that out.
Well, what is it that sparks an idea for you to actually, you know, put it into a story or a novel? What is it that really drives that?
It's hard to say. A lot of times I get ideas just at random. I kind of have a way of entertaining myself. I got another thing that goes back to me being a kid is I can kind of look around and see people just standing around or doing their everyday task, and I'll make up a story for them in my head just for myself. Or I've never even said it out loud, and I've always done that. And I kind of does spill over into writing and creating characters.
Great imagination.
Yeah, that's where a lot of the ideas and characters come from. It's just random thoughts and random observations, and then my mind is off. You know, it's sometimes I don't like to hold on too much because I'll get too much into my imagination, and sometimes you need to stay in the moment, I guess.
Sure.
A lot of times. That's the only thing about being a writer that can sort of get to me sometimes.
I imagine so. So the process of writing and getting it down on paper, or you know, hitting your laptop, so that kind of gets it out of your head and clears your thoughts a little better.
Yeah. Somebody the other day was asking me about a writing style or how I write a book, and I don't have a set way, but usually, as I said, just a scene or a situation will come to mind, and from there I just build around that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't write in chronological order. I've heard writers who do that. You know, they have an outline and really plan it out before they start writing. And I really can't do that. I mean, once I start planning, I'm already writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have to play by ear a lot of times.
So I understand too that race, gender, and generational differences are really strong themes in your writing, and are really strong themes in all of the books that you put out so far. So is this an area that that you will be focusing on future writing projects, and why do these themes, why have they really captured you in your writing?
I just such a big part of our lives. Pretty much anything to do with the way you look, I think, in this world or this life, however you want to put it, that really makes a big impression on everybody. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, what you look like, or whether you're a man or a woman, how old you are, all those things are like the basic foundations of everything that we do. So, of course, all your experiences are kind of going to flow from that. And I don't really see myself concentrating too much on those things. They just kind of come out by themselves, which is, as I said, about not planning the writing. Things just show up by themselves, and then I may go back and edit, and then either something unconscious for me, or maybe it just came out in the writing. I'll see something that'll kind of rear its head in the editing process, and I'll come back and make it a little bigger.
So were there any past writers that really influenced your writing, or for that matter, how you perceive the world around you, which ultimately is going to change or influence what you write about and how you write?
Definitely. I'd have to say, one of the first names that comes to mind is Charles Bukowski, which people who have read a lot probably know who he is. He's kind of a straight-ahead style, no frills. And I remember when I discovered him in college, and you know, I thought I stumbled on a treasure, because he was just someone who could say so many things in just a few words, and I like that kind of writer. Also, Judy Blume was one of my childhood favorites. She was one of the few writers who could make me laugh out loud when I'm reading, and that's a rare thing. That's a really good thing for a writer to be able to do. Those are probably my top two of my Rushmore, I guess.
You're right. That's great. Well, so let's talk a little bit about Shakespeare Ashes, the new book that you put out. Where did the original idea come from for this particular story?
It was just another instance of people watching, pretty much. And I mean, sometimes I don't know if it's amazing or disturbing that sometimes I can just look at a person, and it's not that I actually know about them, but I can be thinking, you know, I can go out and write an entire book about just looking at this person for 5 minutes. And that's what happened with this. And it's really about the four characters in this story that are just getting out of school, or kind of navigating that line between the education in the real world. And obviously, I mean, I, like a lot of people, have some experience with that. But with this story and any story that I write, I'm going to try to push it a lot further than my own experience. Well, I guess the way I can put it is, someone said, do I sometimes use real experiences for stories or that kind of thing? And it's not really things that happen that I can draw on, but it's more the emotions that I've had that I kind of pushed before.
Now, they're all, you mentioned, just coming out of college, so they're early 20s, 20-something. So is this basically the intended audience, kind of the 20s, is for this book?
I'd probably say so, which is kind of hard to say because I know a lot of the kids this at that age are they're probably not reading a lot of books. It's like they are, the only thing they're reading is the Twitters and that kind of thing.
Right.
But, yeah, I think so. I think the people that are late teens and 20s and maybe even up to 30-some probably can relate to this book because, it's one of the things I don't notice as I'm writing, but when I go back and read it, then it's thoroughly a modern story, I guess I would say. The language and the references that these people use, I think that people that are in their 20s will relate to that.
Right. It's very modern. Well, tell us a little bit, Dee, about your four characters, the main characters. Tell us a little bit about them.
Well, there's Donna. What she does, she's probably the closest to me. That she's a journalist, and she's left college for about a year because she had a really bad breakup with a boyfriend, and she's kind of left town and put herself back together, and now she's feeling better. She's back in town to finish school, finish her post-grad, and she meets a new friend named Irvin, who is a funny guy. He seems nice, but he's really closed off, and he's kind of an escapist. He's always looking for the next rush, the next high, and she kind of knows a little bit about him, but she's kind of going with it anyway. She sees herself as a fairly intelligent person, but sometimes her emotions are getting a little bit of the better of her.
Mm-hmm.
And Irvin, of course, he's had a lot of family history that's not very good. As I said, he's not a bad guy, but he's very full of anger, and he's kind of abusing himself with substances and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, he kind of still draws people to him. Very honest and brutally honest person is the way people describe him, and got a good sense of humor. And then there's Irvin's best friend since childhood is Robbie. He's about to enter the pro football ranks, and he's juggling the growing fame that he's coming up with. And because of his own family history, he's a bit of a womanizer, so that's one of his issues, is that he really, in his own heart, he doesn't really trust anybody, including women. So everybody is kind of to be manipulated in his mind. And finally, there's Charlene, or Charlie, as some people call her, because she reminds him of Charlie Brown, What Was Me. And she's adopted, never knew her parents, and she's always had emotional problems. So those continue now. And one of the person that she used to lean on is Irvin, but they've kind of drifted apart, and part of the story is that really fragile relationship. So all of these people, they don't know each other as best friends. It's not quite a St. Elmo's Fire kind of thing, but they do interact. And
we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Hi there. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Chris DeBrie. He is the author of Shakespeare Ashes, and you can find out more about Chris through his website, thesnappynappy.com. What is the context of their interaction with each other?
I didn't want to as I said, I didn't want to make it a kind of a buddy movie or
okay.
buddy book, I should say.
Okay.
But they're not exactly strangers. They've all known each other either casually or very well. Just varies in between which two characters you want to pick. They all know each other, but that was the premise of it.
So we're basically following the lives of these four different characters in their own specific context.
Yeah, it's, it takes place over a month. Actually, I set it to happen right as Obama was being inaugurated, and I kind of made that part of the backdrop of the first chapter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's other things that are happening. It's only a few months in the past, really, in this book.
Very, very modern.
Yeah, yes, it is.
So it's a modern story, yet you have a title, Shakespeare Ashes, which makes me wonder what the reference is to Shakespeare.
Yeah, Shakespeare is, I guess he belongs on the Mount Rushmore, too. He is definitely one of my favorites, although I didn't like most students, I didn't understand him, his writing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of why I referenced him, is that it took me a long time to get to the point where I could actually read him without going to footnotes every 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
But he's definitely one of the masters. I mean, that goes without saying. He's able to, he's another one who can say a lot with just a few lines. I mean, he can read some of his passages, you know, several times over years, and it means something different.
Mm-hmm. And so what does Shakespeare Ashes mean?
Oh, it's a reference to him when he was a young writer, apparently. It's a passing reference in the book. It really doesn't have anything to do with the book, but for some reason, that phrase just stuck out to me, so I used it for the book.
Oh, lovely. So interesting. Well, I understand that you actually also pursue other artistic channels. How important is it for you to explore a diversity of creative outlets, really, that will kind of affect your writing, and how do they affect your writing?
Oh, writing, I've been drawing and dabbling with painting, this kind of thing, since I was a kid, but it's always been the kind of thing where I have to flip around what I'm doing, whether I'm doing writing or art or music, or writing or, you know, drawing or music. I'm doing one, and then I kind of push myself too far and almost to the point of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to put that down and then go to the next thing, and I'll play with that for a few weeks or months, which it always keeps me kind of fresh to, and come back and look at the other thing with fresh eyes. So
mm-hmm.
It's the way it's always been with me.
I can understand the drawing and the painting. How does music factor in to your creativity, and how does that change or influence your writing?
That's a good question. Music is probably one of the things that I'm weaker at in that kind of thing, but music is such a big subject for me. I don't even know where to start with that.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so do you play music, Dee, or do you listen to music, or is it both?
It's mostly listening. I used to play the saxophone, and I still mess around with that sometimes, but mostly just listening to the music, and I'm the kind of person that when I listen to a musical piece, and I can actually see a movie in my head. Like, that's another thing where the imagination comes in. I can, every song that I've ever really enjoyed or really liked at all, then I can put a movie behind it in my head, like even ones that I've heard that are just years in the past, and when I hear that song, I still see the little film that I created in my head for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a trigger. So what kind of music are you listening to?
I'm pretty varied. Usually when I'm writing, I like to have something nonverbal, so probably jazz or classical. It's got to be on something I don't have to look up but I'm not looking up and wondering, well, what lyrics did he just use and that kind of thing.
Right, as you're trying to formulate your own writing, can get confusing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's definitely a big Miles fan, Miles Davis.
Okay, great. Well, let me ask you now a little bit about the whole publishing, marketing, promotional end of writing, which is a big part of being a writer, as you know. So let's start with writers' groups. Do you belong to any writers' groups?
No, that's one thing that I thought about doing years ago, and I never did. My mother tried to get me to, this is years ago, probably in college or right after college, she tried to get me to join a group. I remember this, and I remember my answer was something like, the hour or two that I'm spending talking that I could be writing is just the way I kind of felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I still kind of feel like that, but I know I have heard a lot of people get a lot of benefits from writing groups, and it's still in the back of my mind, so who knows?
Who knows? So do you have, even though you don't belong to a writer's group, do you think it's important to have a wider social community of author friends and peers? Do you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, so tell us about your community.
That's something I'm still building. I've only come around to that thing in like recently.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
So how long of a break was it between your second and third books?
Probably about 6 years, I guess. That's where I was offline and I was just writing from about that. The Focus came out in 2002,
imagine,
and all the time I've been writing. So
I imagine, you know, with putting out your third book and having a 6 year break in between, you know, you start getting more and more seasoned, and you start changing your style and things that you need as a writer. So I'm sure that was a major learning curve, and there was just a lot to absorb in that time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's part of the reason I stopped. I actually put out As-Is and Select the Focus. As I said, both of those books, I wrote the first drafts of them, and I was still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much just cleaned them up and I put them out there so I could have it. And I just took a break and said, I just need to work on myself, work on my craft a little bit, because I mean, As-Is and Select the Focus are okay books, and I've gotten some compliments for them. But as a writer, I mean, I know it's really good, so I kind of held back with this one. And as you said, I took those years off to kind of look at a little experience and see what I was really doing. So
mm-hmm. I think that's so wise.
Yeah. I just had to hold up. I've got a lot of stuff that's kind of that I held back. So I do have some material sitting around I can work on, which is actually turned out to be good, even though I was impatient and all this time.
Mm-hmm. So you went the route of self-publishing. You went with an independent publisher. How has that been for you?
As I said, if anybody who wants to just see their own book in print, and I say go for it, obviously I wanted, after a while I wanted something a little more, but it's not for the faint of heart. If we want more than just holding our book, it's a lot more work than I thought it would be. So the writing part is still the easy part, just everything else is a monster. It's a lot bigger than I thought it was.
It really is a whole job unto itself, isn't it? Once you've got that book in hand, and now what do you do with it?
It really is. I knew that going in, and I still, you know, you just don't have an idea. I guess that's true with most jobs and careers. But
And most writers just want to write. They don't want, you know, they don't want to get into that whole end of things. So what are some tips that you've learned along the way that maybe you could share with some of our aspiring authors in our audience today that may help prepare them a little better for when they do get into that side of book writing?
Definitely. It goes without saying, do your research, whatever you're going to do. If it's involving your work and your money, then make sure you know who you're handing that stuff over to. I mean, that's really, really important. That's the first thing I can think of. A lot of different companies. Everything to me is researching.
Read the fine print.
Read all the fine print. Talk to people. This is just your work and your money, as I said. So
mm-hmm.
That's really the advice I would give. And then I do get emails from people who want advice, and that's usually what I tell them is read everything. I mean, if you're a writer, then you read in the first place, so you want to read everything you come across.
Mm-hmm.
And the other advice, I mean, other than the business side, on the artistic side, I mean, edit, you know, that's like the motto, but you can write edit a million times, you'll never do enough, you're never going to be perfect, so you know, you just try to be.
Do the best you can. Did you get an editor after you did your own edits?
That's something else. I'm working on forming my own team. I kind of did things backwards, so this is why I would be a good one to give advice, because a lot of things I'm a do-it-yourselfer. So
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I'm been learning over the last year or two that you can't be a DIYer on this. So
mm-hmm.
you really need people to help you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you obviously, even if you kind of did this solo, I mean, the reviews are so great for your book. I think that obviously you did a really great job and took a lot of time in it. But that said, it's always great to have fresh sets of eyes looking at it.
Oh, no doubt. There's no doubt about it.
So what do you think the fate is at this point with books? I mean, we're getting into so many new technologies, and who knows what will be happening in the next 5 to 10 years. Where do you think books are going?
Well, a lot of people are trying to kill books, and well, I guess newspapers really may be done. I think books are going to stay around for a while. The Kindle and, you know, downloading stories is, that's really convenient. I think that's a good idea, but the selection is so small. I think it's going to be a long time before the actual physical book gets replaced by anything. I think most people who read, they just want to have that book in their hand. You can't, I mean, you can probably take a Kindle or any kind of device on the beach or anywhere, but it's not the same as having that book that, you know, maybe you want to fold the cover back because you've had the book a long time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's just something comforting about that.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think books will die, no matter how much they try. I think people really, they just want a book, you know, to just sit down with a book and...
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for you, Dee? What are your plans for the next few years?
Well, I'm going to be teaching myself a little more of this networking and book promo kind of thing. Let's talk about a learning curve. That's been a really big one for me this last year or so. But other than that, I'm just trying to make room for writing again. I've been working on a couple of new things that actually I've already got a couple things ready. I'm just trying to let this play out the string I don't know. All this is a learning process. I'm kind of taking it one day at a time. But right now I'm just writing and still researching.
Fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about what your next project might be?
My mother gave me the idea for it. She works in a veterans administrator hospital, and she had an idea for a murder mystery that involves social workers. And I don't know where this idea came from, but once I started thinking about it, that imagination took over, so now I've been working on a mystery for her and also the second part of Selective Focus. This is probably going to be like a 9 or 10 book series. I mean, there's just too many stories to tell on that. So.
Wow. We have much to see from you in the future, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming out.
That's great. That's great, Dee. Well, your website is thesnappynappy.com, and Shakespeare Ashes and your other books can be purchased through your website. Is that correct?
That's right. And everything I'm doing is on that website.
Okay. Great. Great. Well, we definitely encourage listeners to just drop you an email and check out your site and really look for your book. I know it's available also through online booksellers, and I'm sure can be ordered through local bookstores. Let's support our local bookstore. So I want to thank you for coming on the program today, Dee. It's been great talking with you, and we just wish you much success with Shakespeare Ashes.
Thanks, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You bet. You take care.
You too.
All right. Okay, listeners, that's been Chris DeBrie, also known as Dee. His new book, Shakespeare Ashes, is out now. Website, once again, is thesnappynappy.com, and I definitely encourage you to have a look at this book. It's getting great, great reviews, and it was just a real pleasure to talk with Dee today. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. Once again, I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.